The Burrows of Berea is a conversational podcast.
We study the Bible and we talk about it.
Not all of us are of the same faith.
And one of us doesn't have a faith.
But we still love one another, and we're going to continue to talk about these things.
The things we believe in and the things we believe about what we read in the Bible. Not all of these are necessarily true. Some of it is opinion and speculation. Thank you for
listening and speculating with us.
There you go. That was good. Yes.
You are listening to the Burrows of Berea.
Well, welcome back to the Burrows of Berea. I am Rick Welch.
And I am Tiziana Severse.
But where are you from?
I'm from Notes from the Other Side. Well, you didn't say Burrows of Berea. You just said, I'm Rick Welch. Did you see? I said
Burrows of Berea.
Oh my God, did you really? You said, welcome back from Burrows of Berea? Okay, wait, do it again.
You need a vacation
from
your kids.
Yeah, I know.
Hi, I'm Rick Welch from the Burrows of Berea.
And I'm Tiziana Severse from Notes from the Other Side.
And I would like Andy to keep all of that.
Okay.
Please, Andy.
I was thinking that. I was like, that's kind of fun, actually.
Yeah, and you just heard the very sexy, sultry voice of Rocket Man Andy Bishop.
Yes. Yeah.
And my science infection.
This is going to be a really fun episode because this is neither a Burrows or a Notes. It's both. We're going to do a hybrid episode because you are doing a study on the cults, and I actually am doing one on our Patreon page.
Yeah.
And it's only going to be released on Patreon. So that's... We're both fascinated with this. We both came up in these evangelical churches with fundamentalism for me. And I don't know what, were you more like Pentecostalism?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So,
but also mega church, right?
Right, right, right.
Like, so started off as good old fashioned, like snake handling country folk, Pentecostal, lo-fi worship.
Yeah.
Goodness. Right. You know,
what is lo-fi worship?
Oh, just a piano.
Okay. So you mean musically. I didn't know if there was like, I was like.
Just a piano.
I was like, is there some sort of
sometimes
like some particular way?
Sometimes not even a piano.
Not as lo-fi as Daniel Rogers, which was the a cappella only Churches of Christ.
Yeah.
Right, which
That's
was a very
right.
Calvinist way to do things. The Calvinism, he was really against like fancy worship. But I grew up like in just a little old country church with the gospel and laying on of hands and people speaking in tongues and lo-fi worship, i.e., not giant screens and like fancy light shows.
Right.
But then I moved to Maui and went to Maui First Assembly of God, Cathedral of the King, which is a giant mega church with several church plants on different islands and now also in like, you know, the contiguous United States.
Yeah.
And that is like huge 1,000-person arenas, lots of lights, lots of high visibility stuff. And I went to the private Christian school there. So, and I will say for the record, right? Grew up with the pastor and that pastor's son, the pastor's brother of that church was the principal of my school. Wonderful men.
Yeah.
Wonderful family, good-hearted people, not yucky people at all, you know? And like their kids, the pastor of the church, Dr. James Morocco, he has 3 kids, like would totally have any one of them on my apocalypse team and at my table for dinner. Like, and even, and Dr. Morocco, who, oh my God, I can't remember the principal of my school's name. It was his little brother. He passed away. His kids, all of his kids, Mark was in my grade at school, you know, their kids, all wonderful people, the whole family, wonderful people, but it doesn't stop the religion and from the church itself having some really, in my opinion and observation and experience, some pretty toxic high control traits, belief systems, and problems.
Yeah. I mean, that's what the whole purpose of this is for me is to investigate. Not only we're going to look at some of the most, you know, horrific cults in America, but there's something about the way that they get started that, you know, you have to ask the question. I always wondered what Andy would say to this question. Like, all right, Andy, so in America, religion, there are certain—
I've heard of it.
Yes, there are certain religions that are considered acceptable, and there are certain ones that aren't. Have you ever wondered, like, what separates those?
Not really, because it just seems to just be like a dominant culture thing.
Yeah.
Like, you know, whatever there's a lot of is de facto acceptable, and whatever there's not a lot of is roundly de facto less to not acceptable, depending on how closely related to the dominant cultural paradigm it might be.
Right.
Right. The same way that like a lot of people, even though Pentecostals are big and a part of the... My cat is halfway up a trap. Please don't ruin all my stuff.
I couldn't see what you were looking at. So from my edge of the little chair over here, I just saw your face get suddenly terrified. And I was like, I literally was like, there's a killer. Where's my knife? Like for just a second, I was like, you know, that was terrifying for me over here.
My cat has figured out that he can climb all of the acoustical panels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he gets all the way up at the top in that 10-foot corner. The ceiling's, the high ceiling in this room is 10 foot. He gets all the way to the top of the 10-foot corner and walks all around all
right.
of them.
Right, yeah.
Which is very cute, except I think he's going to tear them apart. So some like Pentecostals, even though they're kind of close to the cultural, you know, the main cultural paradigm, right? They're kind of looked askance at because of some of their practices, but they're enough, you know, of the dominant cultural paradigm that they kind of get away with it, right? That's all it is. It's just,
and what's really funny that you would say that. It's the fastest growing church in America, and there's over 600 million of them worldwide.
Oh, Pentecostals.
It's like the dominant, most fastest growing church other than Catholicism.
That scares me.
That's wild, isn't it? Yeah. So.
Shouldn't say that it scares me. I mean, I can understand it coming from, having come from inside that world. I have a lot of theories about why it's so attractive. And this is stuff that I think I'll probably be exploring in the future on Notes from the Other Side is sort of like authority and our relationship to it and how purity culture and authority and ritual have all kind of like, you know, worked together to create this strange, you know, experience that people are having within Pentecostalism, and that's making it so attractive. Mm-hmm. I'm really fascinated by that whole piece of it.
It's partially chemical, right? When you're doing the like tongues stuff, that is a sort of when everything is working the way it's supposed to. That is a sort of chemical high induced by the body because of the state.
You're talking about the ecstatic state.
Right.
And with tongues too, what's interesting is they've done brain scans. Right. Yep. They've done brain scans. And people also get into the ecstatic state, you know, at football games and doing ecstatic dance and things like that. So but one thing
it's
that's
built
also
into the
really
machine.
Interesting
There's
is
just yeah, it's being used for whatever purpose. Yeah.
There's I read a study that I need to, again, I'm gonna go back and look at it and make sure that I'm correct. But I remember reading this study that when they've done brain scans on people that are talking English versus speaking in tongues, and it's like a different part of the brain that's activated too.
I wonder if it
comes from a different piece. It's not from the same place as your language center.
Do you think the tongues one is the same as the singing one? Because that's not the same as the speech one either.
I'm curious because it's a cursory study that I came across. That was just one of those things that happened when I was in college and I was going to like a, you know, liberal arts undergrad. My little fundamentalist past brain went, ooh, don't forget that. I want to look at that later. And then promptly forgot, right?
Yeah.
But yes, it'd be very interesting to look at because the facts of the matter are this, everybody, ladies and gentlemen, everybody listening, I can still speak in tongues when I want to.
Hmm.
I can do it right now. Yeah. I'm not gonna
because
it's weird. But I do it all the time. I will sing in tongues a lot. I like know other people that have like left high control fundamentalist Pentecostalism that also are like, I know I can still do it too. Mm-hmm. And it is. It's a very interesting like special place that my brain kind of goes and a special place that I go to in my spirit, like with God. Absolutely do it privately. I do not do it in front of people like I used to, like in church in front of people. Now I recognize it as like a very kind of like a private personal thing that I do that I know is very weird, but still do it.
I know some people that have said that very same thing that you're saying. You know,
yeah.
I've always been very pragmatic, very practical in my approach to faith. Mm-hmm. And I've never had that gift. And I was around people that said that I never had been saved or had the Holy Spirit because of it. And but I didn't believe that either because I read the scriptures and knew that that wasn't true. But I never had that. I did have somebody who tried to get me to make a lot of mumbling sounds and stuff.
Yeah, they're
and
like, it'll kickstart it.
He was like, just mean it. And I was like, dude, I'm not a child. Okay. So don't talk to me like I'm a child try to get me to do something.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do it. And just because you think it's important doesn't mean that it is, you know, stuff like that. But with that is the same idea about the way that these cults get started. Because most people don't, we're going to be talking about the heavy hitters and I'm going to get into them here in just a minute. This is kind of like an overview of what we're going to be doing on our Patreon stuff, and then you can talk about what you're going to be doing on Notes, because we already have an episode that's out, or it should be, about Keith Green.
Yes. So, yeah. So this episode that we're recording now is going to be coming out after the episode that you and I did, which is over, will be over on Notes from the Other Side.
It's, right.
It'll be live now. That was you and I just getting together because we had originally decided that we wanted to do a podcast, which would be fun, talking about how much we love Keith Green.
Right.
And as we started picking at that scab, oh no, come to find out, the ministry was one of those high control culty ministries.
Yeah.
Which again, Keith was awesome, but it's almost as if the ministries themselves become the separate entity, and the individuals working in and around and inside these institutions and in ministries aren't necessarily quote unquote bad people, but the sum of their parts is.
Right.
And so that's what we kind of like.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
It is, right? Man.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what we ended up talking about for Notes. And I have, you know, and even at the end of that, I was like, next we're going to study Ezra. But like, I've been talking now about this with another guest that we're going to have on the Notes from the Other Side. We're going to be interviewing another guest that's been wrapped in and around some of these high control religions. One of which was the subject of a New York Times bestselling book that came out last summer. Mm-hmm. So she was a part of that cult adjacent ministry.
Right.
And I'm going to be doing some more look on, for example, the book Obedience to Authority and that study and how that relates to this topic. So now I'm going to be going off on a whole, like, I'm going off on a whole tear on my own.
Obedience to, is that Milgram?
Yes. Stanley Milgram.
Okay. So I think that's worth reading, but it's also worth like doing the research about how that was a little bit garbage science.
Oh, sure.
Right?
Absolutely.
You know, it's, but like in the 50s, they liked to just do the worst things ever.
Yeah.
Experiments.
But the thing is that, you know, the Stanford Prison Experiment came
terrible
after that.
Oh, that's garbage.
It's garbage, but garbage. It also created the same sort of environment wherein, and what we're talking about is in, where the authority itself, the physical authority.
People have since reported that they were being encouraged to act mean by the people doing the
lots of other different likes. There's also different like studies, but I mean, you know, like, but anyhow, the idea being that occasionally in these environments, somebody is more likely to do something that they personally wouldn't necessarily do if they feel that the authority in the room is telling them to do it, or that's
absolutely
the culture.
Sure.
That's what I'm talking about. And that's what I'm saying when I say the pastors, and it was David Morocco was the principal of my school.
Okay.
Lovely fellow. Loved him, his wife, Pam, his son and daughter, he had two sons and a daughter. You know, Dr. James Morocco, his wife, Colleen, their kids, all wonderful people who've taken over the ministry now. Individually, they're wonderful people. The institution itself that they all are like, look, it's not me. It's not me. Them's just the rules.
Right.
Yeah.
Right? It's not me. That's just the rules. So people don't realize that like good individuals can be inside of institution and the institution itself can still be sick. And so that's the kind of thing that I will be looking at and that I will be talking about and interviewing people and looking at it from like a socio-psychological perspective.
Right. And I'll be going through the heavy hitters.
Yeah.
But the one thing that I want everyone to understand is that most of these cults start off with very good intentions and very good people.
Oh yeah, very positive. Yeah.
Yeah, and the people that are involved want to be a part of a community. They want to be loved and appreciated. Mm-hmm. They want to give effort. They want to see fruits of their labor. Mm-hmm. Like they all start off well, but these heavy hitters usually have one or two people that kind of go, the power kind of gets to them. And then they really start to shift, you know, and once that happens, the whole organization starts to suffer under it.
Yeah.
But because they're so, you could use the word indoctrinated into the system, whatever that might be, that they find it's very difficult for them to leave and it's very difficult for the families to reach them. They get isolated.
Oh, yeah.
You know, things like that. Then you can't, you know, it's like you can't reach them. So,
yeah.
So let's just start off with some fun little queries, shall we? All right. So either one of you jump in. Do you guys know what Jonestown is?
Only vaguely. The Jonestown Massacre. I don't know the story. Yeah, that's not the Kool-Aid one.
It is.
Yeah.
It is the Kool-Aid one. Okay, so
that's where the joke, don't drink the Kool-Aid, or someone has or hasn't drunk the Kool-Aid, meaning that they have now usurped their own authority and their own ability to reason and think and have become the Borg.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So Jonestown is the first one that I'm going to be tackling in a series we called Shadows of Jonestown. And it's going, we're going to talk about its leader, Jim Jones, and how he was this very charismatic figure that actually did a lot of good early on in his ministry when he started the People's Temple. It was one of the most diverse groups that you would find. This was during the civil rights era, and they had, you know, African American, Caucasian, they had Native American, they had, you name it, and plus, you know, foreign people like Filipino and all that, all together in one group. And they were thriving. They were doing really well, and they were impacting their community in a positive way. They had, they dealt with homeless. They helped people get like into homes. They sort of acted like a communal type group even early on, even though they had their own homes. They would invite people in, you know, off the streets and work together to, you know, feed those and take care of, you know, like single mothers. And like the outcasts were the ones that they were going after, which sounds very Jesus-esque, right?
Yeah, like
that's,
sure.
That's what happens. But along the way, Jim Jones begins to start to drink in this power. He sees the influence he has. He gets involved in politics, and the politicians actually really prop him up. I mean, they, as a matter of fact, one of them in San Francisco, I'm sure you guys have heard of Harvey Milk.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Harvey Milk used to go, you know, and speak at the People's Temple and be a part of that group. He loved Jim Jones at the time. And of course, he was murdered. Not by People's Temple, but you know, in a separate event, because he was, you know, openly gay, you know, as a politician. But then also, Jim Jones helped other people get elected, and because of that, they put him on like special committees, you know, for the communities there in like LA. Because he starts out in Indiana, and then he realizes that, you know, with the way American society was, he was more of a communist. He was more of a socialist. And he didn't agree with, you know, American politics really at all. And so he had initially thought that he was going to go to South America, but it just didn't work. And so in his mind, he'd read this article, I think it was in a Time magazine, about nuclear war and how the safest place in the States was like Redwood Valley, California. So that's where he picked up and moved his church from Indiana all the way out to Redwood Valley.
Ooh, like a little bit of power, and then sprinkle some paranoia in there.
Yep,
and
isolates them.
A little smattering of paranoia.
Yeah, exactly. So once he gets there, he begins to teach these like government classes in the local night schools, and he gets his own followers to come to those classes and to speak highly of him and sort of—
Oh my gosh. Okay, so now his ego's starting to get involved.
His ego's getting in the way. And then, you know, as a matter of fact, I can't remember the name of the politician that was in San Francisco, but he compared him to Martin Luther King Jr. and Angela Davis, like, and Albert Einstein all wrapped into one. He said this in a public address. So Jim Jones was respected to an extent, but then Jim also got involved. He had really high anxiety, and so he started self-medicating, and then he started doing a lot of barbiturates.
That'll change your brain.
Yeah, and so next thing you know, he's going and he's teaching sermons with sunglasses on.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Because he's high.
Yeah.
And he starts to get really anxiety-ridden to the point where he thinks that he's being watched by the FBI.
Paranoia.
The FBI and the CIA.
Paranoia will just screw a person up.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, and so he starts developing, like, he has, since he has such a great following, and because they really are helping so much.
Yeah.
He creates this like security force within his own group that watches over the members, and they begin to like publicly beat their members that they're out of line and things like that. And because he's so worried that the CIA or FBI or somebody's going to come down on
him. Oh my gosh.
He makes the decision again because of nuclear war, and he's the only one that can save them. So he buys a lot of land down in Guyana, South America, near Georgetown, which is the capital of Guyana. And he calls it Jonestown. And the idea is that all of these members, they had over 3,000 members, and about 1,000 of them leave and they go down. And so while they're there, it's supposed, you know, they're sending all kinds of images back about the happiness that they're in and everything. But then they start getting these, here in America, they start especially in California, they start getting these messages from their families like, hey, I think that they're not allowed to leave. Like, I think they have to stay and they won't let us come see them. And like, this is getting bizarre. Like, he's not letting them go. And so turns out Congressman Leo Ryan there in Los Angeles makes the determination to go down there. And he takes an advisor and he takes a bunch of news reporters, journalists, photographers, videographers with them. And they get down there and Jim Jones won't allow them in. And they're down there for like 4 days. Finally, he lets them in. And while Congressman Ryan is there talking to the people, they're all happy and everything looks great. Then they start, one of the cameramen gets a note slipped to him like, please help us get out of here.
That's so terrifying.
So like there's this combination thing going on where you're seeing this facade of everything is wonderful.
Well, I mean, that's like North Korea.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Like, you know, they had like, they'll drive up and down the road and you see like clean streets and shops and windows that look full of groceries and everything looks wonderful. But like, there's nobody buying the groceries. There's, you know what I mean? Like, there's no people actually doing anything in the grocery stores. Like, what? Yeah.
They called themselves the Class. Later, Heaven's Gate. A group of ordinary people who walked away from everything and believed they were chosen to leave this world behind. Not metaphorically, literally.
If I would title this tape, it would be Last Chance to Evacuate Planet Earth Before It Is Recycled.
Led by a man who claimed to speak for beings beyond the stars, they trained, obeyed, disappeared. And in 1997, they carried out one of the most haunting acts of mass death in American history.
San Diego sheriff's deputies stumble into a house of death, a multi-million dollar mansion filled with dozens of bodies, the site of a grim mass suicide.
But this isn't just a story about a cult. This is a story about the need to belong, about the quiet loneliness that hides in plain sight, and the human desire to believe in something, even if it means leaving Earth behind to find it. I'm Rick Welch. Join me as we uncover the chilling truth behind Heaven's Gate, from hospital beds to the internet, from whispered prophecy to suicide pacts. This is the full story, told in real time from the inside out. This is The Skywatchers, a 7-part investigative podcast series. Available only on Patreon. Subscribe now at www.patreon.com/theburrowsofBerea and hear the story that was never meant to be told. The stars are waiting. Are you?
So Congressman Ryan, while he's there, he gives a small speech. The people are very elated. And then he asks Jim Jones, he says, if any of your members want to leave, can I take them with me? And he doesn't like the idea, but he says, look, we're a socialist community. If they don't want to be here and they're not happy, they can leave. But he was lying.
Yeah.
And one of the members of the People's Temple try to kill the congressman with a knife. He's able to escape. They get to the airstrip, where they have two planes there. They're taking 15 members of this 900 to 1,000 member community. And out of nowhere, a tractor trailer with men armed come in and kill the congressman. Did you know any of this?
Yeah. And vaguely. I mean, not details, but yes.
Shoot up everybody. Yeah. And some of them run into the jungle terrified. And Jim Jones realizes that this is it.
Yeah.
And what they learn, okay, the way that we know how it all went down was because they recorded everything with cassette tapes there. And so the last 45 minutes of the massacre is caught on tape where he's saying, oh, how I've loved you, and now they're coming to get us. And so the only way out is for us to have a revolutionary suicide together. And you can hear people trying to argue with him, like, we don't need to do this. There's hope. And he's like, no, it's too late. And then
He's lost his mind.
He has.
It sounds like he slowly lost his ever loving mind.
Yes, and because of the genuinely. Group. Yeah. Because the group was so powerful and so strong, the people hung in.
But he couldn't handle the drugs, power, right?
Yes.
Who knows what other influences were knocking at his, you know, his psyche.
Yes.
It sounds like he lost his mind.
Yeah, and like for a long time, people have considered this like this is the largest mass suicide, you know, in American history because over 913 men, women, and children died.
That's awful.
And here's the thing. They don't call it mass suicide anymore. They call it mass murder because these people were deeply affected in their minds and they made these choices. And some of them didn't make choices. They know that well over a third of the people were forced to take.
Yeah.
It was actually cyanide-laced Flavor-Aid, not Kool-Aid, but we say don't drink the Kool-Aid. But they injected the children and stuff like
that.
Oh
my God. Did they?
They did.
Wow.
They did. The parents injected their own children, and then after they died, then they took the Kool-Aid. So
that is absolutely horrifying. A huge aftermath.
I would just like to say that this is absolutely the biggest relations coup of all time.
Yes.
That Kool-Aid gets this.
I know.
The people doing press at Flavor-Aid, not paid enough.
The funny thing is like everybody says don't drink the Kool-Aid. The Kool-Aid guys were like, this is terrible. How do we get up with this? And Flavor-Aid's like, sorry
just whistling
about that,
and walking away. Yeah.
Exactly. Like, woo, we skirted that one. But who actually drinks Flavor-Aid today? Anybody?
Yeah, well, exactly. I don't even know what that is.
So I think, you know, what is it? What do they say? Bad publicity is good publicity?
Yeah, that Michael Jackson used to say that. Whenever all the weird shit that he did came out and all the tabloids, he was like, look, they're still talking about me.
Not only that, they're buying my albums.
Yeah, right?
Yep. So yeah, when you go... You know, with us, we're actually getting into this, like we're talking about it more in depth, and you can learn more about this. And then we finalize the episode about getting into the psychology behind it, like really what happened over time. And like Andy said, you're dealing with somebody that went from a minister to a megalomaniac, but how he got to become a megalomaniac was most likely through drugs and paranoia. You know, so we get into that. All right.
I wonder if he was sleeping. Man, lack of sleep would make a person wacky.
Being a person, Jubilee didn't sleep. Oh, man. Yeah. She didn't sleep.
Yeah.
Forever. Mm-hmm. You know, she was awake for like a year.
And neither did you.
Yeah.
Sleep deprivation is murder.
She only slept like an hour and a half
terrible.
To 2 hours in a night. And it was like, there would be times where, you know, I would be up nursing with her and I would get her to sleep. And then as soon as I would lay down, the other one would wake up for some reason, which would be normal for the other one to wake up at 3 years old in the night, you know, get up, get her a glass of water, put her back to bed. And then as soon as I lay back down, now the other one's up for nursing round number two.
Oh, Lord.
So like there were whole months where I was operating on, you know, 2 hours of uninterrupted sleep a night and then maybe 2 hours more of disrupted sleep.
Wow.
And I was, I mean, I called.
It's hard.
I lost my mind.
Yeah, we need to sleep.
Yeah.
Humans need to sleep or they do not brain good.
8 months of that. Eight months of that. And I sent Dylan a text being like, I'm going to drive myself off a cliff. I need to sleep. I'm going to die. He like rushed home from work to me being like.
Yeah, you can get like wildly paranoid, even hallucinate. Paranoia is like a big one for lack of sleep. Yeah, it's very bad.
Sleep deprivation is terrible. And I will tell you this, that they were sleep deprived there. They did this thing called White Nights. And what would happen is that Jim Jones would get on the big broadcast horn and tell everybody they had to come into the center of the commune where they had like this, I forget what they call it. It's like a, what do you call it? Where you have like a stage and everybody comes. I can't remember. I'm so sorry. My brain is not working. I'm sleep deprived.
A pavilion?
Pavilion. Thank you. Pavilion. He would call everybody to the pavilion and then they would go through this test of taking this cyanide-laced Flavor-Aid because he said that the CIA was there, they were coming, they were going to murder, rape, torture their children, and that we were going to do this revolution suicide, so they would all be crying and be upset, and then they would force their kids to drink it, and then they would drink it, and then 30 minutes later, he would say, this was a test.
That's wild.
It's called White Nights, bro. And one time, they did one called a six-day siege, where the White Night lasted for 6 days. Where they all stayed like in the pavilion for 6 days dealing with this. So he had them sleep deprived. He had them like.
As a mother, I don't know how you live with, like, I don't know how you handle that.
I don't either, but I think that some of them really believed in the commune. Some of them wanted to get out, but knew they couldn't. And so they were just trying to make the best of it and hoping for the best, I guess. But I've read a lot about this, and it's a terrifying situation. And
yeah.
And, you know, I've often thought, well, I could never find myself in one of those, but that's a lie. I think I probably could have found myself in a cult like this, especially in my 20s, because I was very, you know, I was very interested in doing something great. And, you mm-hmm. know, so, and I, even in my 30s, I think I told you a story about when I was crawling up some steps.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
I'll tell Andy that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this was when I was like 38 years old, and I was at a church. I won't say where, and I won't say who this person was, but while we were having this prayer time, the man that was the preacher was talking, and he starts crying like a lot, and he feels this burden in his heart, like for the lost in our community. And he gets down, like lays down on the ground, and he's praying. And eventually the deacons, they get up and they lay down, and more of the older men in the church get down. They're all laying down prostrate on the ground because they're like, this is an idea of like laying down before God. I mean, they're not Pentecostals whatsoever. Like they're not slain in the spirit. This is like, we're laying down before God. We're just begging for help. And, you know, I'm there, and pretty much like every man's on the floor. This is a men's prayer room. And I felt compelled, like, I guess I better do what everybody else is doing.
Yeah. Oh, dude, we're herd animals, man.
Yeah, I know.
So you can love it or you can hate it, but it's true.
So I laid down and I'm sitting there. And of course, you know, I feel foolish. I mean, like, I understand. To me, it's like, okay, this if one of these guys, you know, in their heart, like this is something that really matters to them, I don't know why all of us have to do it. And then the next thing you know, they start crawling. I've never seen anything like this in my life. They're crawling through the hallway. They crawl up the stairs. They crawl out into the main sanctuary where all of the other people who are waiting for the service to start are. And these men are blubbering and crying. And I'm like, I feel so foolish. What are we doing? But I was still on my hands and knees with everyone else.
Yeah.
I'm 38 years old. I'm a grown man.
Yeah.
I no longer go there because of it. Like yeah. I quit going simply because I was like,
That's too weird.
I can't do it. Like, this is not me. I'm not going to do it. But at the same time, in the back of your head, you're like, were those people really just in there? You know, they were just lying prostrate because they really wanted God to move, and that meant so much to them that He did. And I can get it, but dude, it just wasn't for me. Like, I'm not going to crawl up steps and lay down on the floor in the middle of the sanctuary because I don't think that it's necessary. You know what I mean? Like, so I just left.
Well, and that's the other thing about these groups that I find fascinating, and that's the piece that really strikes me, because like Andy just said, we are animals and we are herd animals, mm-hmm. right? We are hardwired for in-group, out-group.
For the record, I use the word herd because I think it's hilarious. We're not technically herd animals, but we are.
We're communal, social creatures.
Yeah, communal
We're
group.
Communal
yeah.
social creatures, right?
Right.
And so as part of that, we are hardwired for this in-group, out-group thing. You are, because it's a safety mechanism, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
If you are part of my tribe, part of my team, then you aren't going to like, you know, be in competition with me or my family for resources.
Yeah.
And so we do this in-group, out-group thing, which again has led to one of the things that Dan McClellan talks about all the time, this costly signaling thing mm-hmm. that would, what are you willing to do to prove your in-groupness to the in-group? And the stakes get so high when you're talking about religious affiliation, because you're now just not saying, are you a part of our group and how are you going to prove it? You're saying, are you allowed to have relationship with God?
Right.
Then what are you doing? God, what are you willing to do to prove it? Mm-hmm. Are you willing to crawl on your hands and knees up the stairs because that's what everybody else is doing? Are you willing to like pretend to drink this Kool-Aid because that's what everybody else is doing?
Right.
There's this really intense, whenever a group has co-opted God connection.
Yep. Oh, yeah. That's what this is
about.
That
is where your own ability to, and that's exactly what this is about, because that's how the Jim Jones started.
Right.
It was religious, spiritual affiliation. Mm-hmm. And when you believe, and like I believed for so long, I mean, I can stop and think back, and again, in my early 20s, because I shaved my head and gave a big bird to all of this stuff when I was 23, which is when I met Andy.
Right.
So I can look back on like 20, 21, 22-year-old Tiziana, and I feel so fucking bad for that kid, man.
Yeah.
The hours that I would spend like on my knees in prayer, vomiting because I was fasting for days and hadn't eaten anything, just Oof. Doing anything I could that these people told me to do.
Right.
Because they held in their hands, in my belief system, mm-hmm. the keys to my relationship to God.
Right.
And that's what these larger churches do. These large congregations, if you get kicked out of their church, they're not just kicking you out of the church. They're saying you don't actually belong in the kingdom of God anymore.
That's right. Yeah.
And that's a really, that's scary.
And not only that, but people who are your friends, your family, things like that, suddenly you're castigated and you're people just don't want anything to do with you.
Yeah.
And
even groups that don't have an outright theory of shunning, that's not the right word. Yeah. Policy, an outright policy of shunning.
Oh.
So I get interrupted, but what I was trying to say was places that don't actually have an outright policy of shunning, they still end up shunning just sort of by accident, because when somebody divests themselves from a group like that, it's just awkward. And if you're not participating in the daily life of that thing, you're going to lose connection with some or all of those people. And that's just kind of inevitable. And then it kind of winds into this weird thing you'll hear next that we eventually work our way out of. It's a little boring at first, but only for like a couple seconds. All right. I don't know what that meant. I'll make this brief. I had to update the software for this remote today.
Yeah.
And it just did this like flashy thing. It looked very important. It was like pink and then blue. It was a bright neon colors. And I just assumed, oh, maybe the recording stopped and they just put something in there to, I don't know, be loud about that. No, nothing stopped. Nothing changed. Everything is exactly how it's supposed to be. It just flashed a lot and scared me.
Man.
That was the second time in this episode that you have made a face that suggested to me I needed to grab a blunt weapon.
Yeah, I feel like...
That was the second time that I was like, where's a sharp object?
For whatever reason, if you keep doing this, I feel like it's going to be like mind control.
Oh yeah, like a Pavlovian response. Like Andy's every time Andy goes makes a startled face.
Every time I look to my left, you guys panic.
I'm just gonna my heart rate's gonna naturally elevate.
Have you guys ever seen? Do you guys ever watch the Office, the American version?
Yeah.
Do you guys remember the one where where Jim would? He would shut down his Windows, I think it was Windows 95, and it would make that little boom. And then he would ask Dwight if he wanted a mint. Have you ever seen that?
Oh, yeah. And then it gets to the point where it's like, it goes ding, and Dwight just opens his mouth and he tosses.
But at the end, he reaches at the very last time.
He reaches his hand out
and he's like, what are you doing, Dwight? And he's like, I don't know. Suddenly my mouth feels really nasty.
Yeah, that's what it is. I've seen that episode.
Yeah.
That's funny.
So Andy keeps looking to the left and we just keep.
immediately going to start.
I got to figure out what that light means. It didn't mean anything about the recording. All right, what was I talking about?
Herd animals.
We might just have to abandon
when these groups are not just using their costly signaling to denote in group out group, when they're using it to control your access to God. You've got all of these denominations, and every single denomination is split along these like theological lines that are like very, very hairy. And immediately it's like, yeah, but then you're not a real Christian. Oh, we are.
Right.
I
remember seeing that with Dan. Like Dan, when we were in studio with Dan literally said the words, I am a Christian, but he's not the kind that this person likes. So he gets kicked on all the time. Whereas if you know anything about Dan and watch his channel at all, he's also critical of Mormonism. He's also critical of the Book of Mormon. He's also critical of that stuff. He doesn't just bring it to the Bible, but if you ever listen to Dan and if you ever watch his videos, he never dumps on Jesus.
Right.
Ever.
Mm-hmm.
Ever.
Yeah. So.
So as far as I can tell, that man's a Christian.
Yeah.
I don't give a shit, you know?
I mean, putting those two things in the same sentence, it was beautiful. Right.
You know? But it was like, we have all these stupid things.
They're rules.
That we say, you know, this is what makes you, this is what makes you, except for the thing that actually matters.
How does anybody really know anything about somebody else anyway?
I mean, really.
I mean, you can signal all you'd like, but it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. Yes. Right. Well, then, because that's exactly what costly signaling is for.
Yeah.
It's to put on a show. It's not necessarily.
I just got news. If you start crawling up the stairs, it's not because I'm following you.
If I start crawling up the stairs, it's because I'm possessed of a demon.
Or you drank too much.
I'm having like a Linda Blair moment.
Yeah, or you drank too much at dinner. Crawling up from the basement from having too much wine during your podcasting.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on. So I'm going to ask you another question.
Okay.
Can you guys tell me what you know about the Branch Davidians?
No, very little.
I refuse to say anything about the Branch Davidians.
You don't really care for them?
It's not that I don't know literally anything about it. I just want to know what you know first.
So the Branch Davidians, I always remember it as the 51-day siege that we watched on television whenever President Bill Clinton was in office and Janet Reno was the attorney general. And there were these people that were inside this compound down in Waco, Texas, and there was a lot of concern. He had a lot of high-powered weapons, mm-hmm. you know, rifles. There were children there. There was talk of abuse, sexual abuse. Mm-hmm. The idea that he was married to some of these young teenage yeah. girls, like 12, 13, 14-year-old girls. He was also engaging in polygamy. Mm-hmm. So that's what I remember, like, without knowing much about it.
Yeah.
So I decided to get into this to try to figure out, like, first of all, how did this become a cult?
Yeah.
And, you know, why do these people decide to go and live in these communal type things, you know, where they're all like putting things together. So the leader of this group was David Koresh, but his real name was Vernon Howell. David Koresh just sounds cooler.
Yeah, it's a cooler name. Yeah, he's
yeah.
right.
Yeah, he made the right choice there.
It turns out they were an offshoot of the Seventh-day Adventist Church.
And that
had happened in 1955. The peak membership of that particular group of Branch Davidians was about 130 in the Waco compound. On April 19th, 1993, after a 51-day siege, you know, the FBI raided. Mm-hmm. They put in gas. There were explosions. They don't know who really started the fire. The idea is that it started from the inside. The idea was started from the outside. It was a mess. But 82 Branch Davidians, including children, and 4 ATF agents were killed. I don't know if you remember when the ATF agents tried to go in and they, you know, they had guns. There was... Besides Koresh, there was Steve Schneider, Wayne Martin. Steve Schneider was Koresh's top lieutenant, mm-hmm. kind of like the way that Jim Jones had his own little security council internally. This guy had a lieutenant who was kind of over everything. And then they had their own attorney named Wayne Martin. And of course, Janet Reno was the U.S. Attorney General who authorized the FBI raid. The reason the ATF and the FBI were there were because of illegal weapons and the child abuse allegations. But there was this horrible fire. And one of the weird things that happened, I don't know if you know this or not, but are you familiar with the name Timothy McVeigh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Timothy McVeigh was actually on the outside, not a part of the group, but he was there observing what the FBI and the ATF were doing to this particular group.
Oh, so he was like, was he officially some sort of observer from another third group
sort of thing? No, he was
personally.
Yeah, it wasn't just personal. I think he was involved with some more of these, you like to say conspiracy theorist uh-huh. type groups, but these militias, you know, that you would mm-hmm. hear out, you know, in the Midwest that were very upset, you know, with the government.
Very big in New Hampshire.
Yeah. Is there?
Yeah, New Hampshire? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know
Live
that.
Free or die state?
Oh, yeah, okay.
Hell boy.
So, yeah, we're going to get into that because this man in particular had one of the most unique brains. Vernon Howell had memorized the Bible. He believed that he was writing like the final,
yeah, the final
words
testament.
Of God, the
yeah.
final testament. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he believed that he was the Lamb.
Yeah.
Of God. And I don't know that he thought that he was when he started, but he certainly did by the time he ended. And a lot of people believed it. I mean, there were grown men that were married that gave their wife to David Koresh because they thought that's what God would have them to do.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was wild, man. It's a wild story. It involves the U.S. government. And it, for me, like, I remember I had graduated high school and I was watching all this stuff unfold on television. I thought it was crazy.
Did some of those people get out alive?
Some. But only just a few on the day of, and some people had already left the group. Yeah, it's pretty wild. So we're going to talk about them, the Branch Davidians, and the debacle in Waco. So here's another one. Tell me what you guys know about Heaven's Gate.
Now, I don't know anything. That's local, isn't it?
That was
like isn't that Black Mountain? Or
no, Heaven's Gate was in California.
Oh, never mind. Oh, yes. I'm thinking of okay, never
it was
mind.
In San Diego. Have you ever heard of Heaven's Gate?
I've heard of it.
You probably remember the story about the group that was wearing black sweatsuits
yeah.
and Nike shoes.
Oh, they all had the same sneakers.
And
yeah.
they committed suicide,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Another suicide group. Yeah. So this group was created in 1974 by two people, Marshall Applewhite. I don't know if you've ever seen that dude's face. Like, he's got a wild face. The Heaven's Gate videos.
Really?
Oh, man. And a woman by the name of Bonnie Nettles. And this started in San Diego, California, but it ended tragically on March 26, 1997. So this group lasted a long time.
That's a long time.
23 years, mm-hmm. Yeah. Over 39 members died by suicide in the same way. The funny thing was, and it's not really funny, but they're a UFO-based religion. They started with Christianity, though, and they ended up with UFO-based religion. And they believed they would send to an alien spacecraft following the Hale-Bopp comet. Do you remember when the Hale-Bopp comet came?
Yeah. Yes.
It was a big deal, you know? I mean,
this is so funny. It sounds like what's the other one that kind of secretly, the other Christian religion that smaller but not tiny, that secretly kind of believes in other planets and Jehovah's.
Oh, yeah. Jehovah's Witnesses?
I think that's Mormons, actually.
The Mormons. Yeah. Is it Mormons?
Are you talking about the
it's
ones
Mormons.
That have, like, the Mormons? Because they've got, like, yeah, like, multiple heavens, too, yes. And, like, you know, a whole different, like,
that they
universe.
Become gods and
yeah,
other
their
planets.
Own little planet. Like, they get their own planet when they die, kind of a thing.
I think the Jehovah's are a little more, like, in a thing they don't talk about, they might be a little more alien-based.
Yeah.
I might be wrong about that.
Well, what's really interesting is that something that I was always fascinated
with. The
more
alien-based denominations.
Yeah.
Well, if you think about
it. Well, that sounds like one of the most alien-based denominations.
Yeah.
Look, but think about it this way. If you read the Bible, okay, and you hear about Elijah leaving, how does Elijah leave the earth? Does he die?
He's caught up.
Caught up in what?
In a whirlwind.
In a whirlwind of what?
Smoke.
Spaceships.
Fire. Oh, yeah, that's right.
Okay. Whenever Jesus ascends, how does he leave?
He just goes up in the air.
Spaceships. He goes in a cloud.
They're like, he's like, bye.
Right. He's a cloud rider.
He's taken up in the air.
He's yeah. known, they're, the gods of the Old Testament were known as cloud riders, right? Like Baal, the cloud rider, right?
Oh, yeah.
So the idea, if you can imagine a spaceship with a lot of fire coming behind it, or like our rocket ships, mm-hmm. right? You hear about the two witnesses, how they can call down fire and things like that. So Marshall Applewhite, they were sort of playing on this idea that Jesus was another being. He was an alien being. He was able to do supernatural things like walk on water.
Oh, yeah.
Sounds very supernatural, very science fictionist, mm-hmm. you know, fictionesque. So when they decided to do this, this was one of the first like internet era like things, like mm-hmm. where things that went viral in the 90s, you know, it was huge because they were able to watch these things on and read about them on the internet. And all of them died with phenobarbital mixed with applesauce and vodka, followed by suffocation with plastic bags over their heads.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that's a little work.
How do you suffocate yourself to death?
You tape it around your neck. Yeah, bro. Very weird.
You got super drunk and super stoned.
Yeah. And by the way, this was not a sex cult. Whereas Waco kind of was for one dude. And then Jim Jones, it was not a sex cult. Mm-hmm. In fact, they were very Puritan style. Like, we don't want you to, you know, to have sex.
Murder your children. Totally cool. Extramarital sex, not so much.
I mean, right. I mean, you could... Like, they would determine who could marry and who couldn't and things like that. But but it wasn't like it was a sex cult. And Heaven's Gate uniquely was not a sex gate at all. In fact, their leaders had castrated himself, and several men did castrate themselves and because they believed that the sexual
impulse
that they had was bad, you know, and so they tried to get rid of it.
That's so sad.
It is.
But so calm. I mean, the thing is, you're talking about extremes. Of a belief system and a set of ideas that is extremely common in standard Christians,
mm-hmm.
in very standard Christians.
Yeah.
For them too, sex and sexuality is wicked and evil outside the bonds of marriage.
Yes.
So it's very easy to see how that could lead to this, because that thinking, in my opinion, is also toxic.
Yeah. Look, it doesn't, for me, I've been having a difficulty. It's such a fine line between what you would consider normalized religion and cult behavior.
Dude, listen,
it's so close.
Let's be honest.
I don't know how you can, it's hard to divide them.
And that's the whole point. And that's the like the terms that I am coming to within all of this.
Yes.
Is that like a spoonful of sugar makes the medicine go down.
It does.
You know?
Spoonful of Kool-Aid.
Yeah. Makes the cyanide go down.
We just high-fived across the room there. All right, let's see if you guys know this group. Have you ever heard of Nexium?
No.
Isn't that like a
That's
drug?
A hair care.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is a Nexium that is for, I think, for acid reflux. It's the purple pill.
Huh.
All right. So Nexium is actually a cult that started in Albany, New York, and its leader was Keith Raniere. And this was founded in 1998 and only tragically ended in 2017.
Wow.
That's not too long ago. No.
These cults are, they're like, that still is like a 20 years time span.
So listen to this. Their peak membership was in the thousands, including celebrities and wealthy elites. They were headquartered in Albany, New York. Here are the key figures. God. Keith Raniere, he was convicted of sex trafficking and racketeering, but he was considered a genius, and he had written all of these programs to help people in the corporate professional world. Okay. And he had a partner named Nancy Salzman, who was involved in psychological manipulation. Okay. Then they were funded by Claire Bronfman. She was the wealthy heiress of the Seagram's Empire.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Yeah, buddy.
To all the gin you could drink.
And then
the blood of Christ was gin.
The highest ranking recruiter within this group, her name was Allison Mack. And if you've never heard of her, all you have to do Allison Mack was on, she was a very well-known actress who was in the Superman television show.
Oh.
Allison Mack. And she
was- The one with Dean Cain?
Dean Cain. No, that was Lois and Clark.
Yes. No.
No, this was the Superman. Let me find out exactly. I'm going to Google-
Not Smallville.
Allison Mack- TV.
I love that we're all Googling.
Let's Google it.
Let's Google it.
Smallville.
Okay, Smallville. Yes.
Yep, she was in Smallville. She was in Wilfred. She was
What's
in-
What's that other cutie pants?
Seventh Heaven. She was in a lot of shows.
Yeah.
Very, very well-known, high-profile actress.
Seventh Heaven, that's sad. The dad's a diddler.
The 90s.
Yeah. Sad?
Yeah.
Such a bummer.
What's that?
I was just thinking the 90s.
Yeah.
I know this didn't end in the 90s, but
right.
The 90s loved a cult, huh?
The 90s loved a cult, man.
So here's the thing. The famous quote from this group is, "We are committed to ethics."
Yeah.
But the controversial secret subgroup within Nexium was called DOS that branded women as slaves.
What?
Sex slaves for the leader.
Wow.
Oh my gosh.
Keith Raniere had been sentenced to 120 years in prison. And the cultural impact from this group is it led to greater awareness of coercive control and psychological abuse, especially in the corporate world. So I'm kind of going for some different groups, like what these heavy hitters.
Yeah.
Like I'm looking at the corporate idea. Yeah. I'm looking at sex cults. I'm looking at non-sex and pewter culture, but I'm also thinking about UFO-based and
coercion. They all have a common thread of control of sexuality,
mm-hmm.
condemnation of sexuality, a sort of disdain for sexuality, and a misogynistic undercurrent.
Yeah.
And so— And those are two things
that would be a great
are
name
extremely
for like a massage therapist.
Misogynistic undercurrent.
That wouldn't be a great like
only if it was Donald Trump's personal masseuse.
Misogynistic undercurrent.
Yeah. Yeah, misogynistic undercurrent. But it's like these are two really big things that like so on the other side of that.
Yep.
Not a church or a group or whatever that doesn't predicate its a big piece of its membership on willingness to subjugate your own sexuality to this particular group,
yep.
and that doesn't participate in any sort of patriarchal or misogynistic standards.
Mm-hmm.
Like for me, those two things seem like obvious, and yet so many mainstream churches, those are two pillars. Not yeah. that they would acknowledge that because they're just doing that's God's word, Tiziana.
Right.
That's
right.
What God says.
I'm telling you, there is
wild.
A fine line, man.
Yeah.
In my study, especially in the psychology behind this, there is a fine line, very, very fine line.
Yeah.
And I personally think that I'm easily susceptible to cult-like behavior. I've discovered that about myself.
Yeah.
And so now I started a group called Pound Sand. And
I want to throw one in here just because it's not a Christian cult, but the cult that did the sarin gas attacks in the Tokyo subway.
Yes. Ocean Rikyo?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Shinrikyo.
Shinrikyo.
Yeah, yeah. Or A-Lift. Yeah. And I thought of that because you were mentioning like the captains of industry and wealthy people and stuff. That cult was primarily, they recruited primarily from very high, like high earning, super highly educated, influential people. That cult was like very, what do you want to call it? I don't know. I always find that interesting because it's a fun reminder.
They
that,
were very smart. They were very intelligent.
Education and general intelligence does not make you immune from that stuff.
No.
It doesn't.
It doesn't. And that's the thing. Like, it's all so fascinating.
Yes.
It's so fascinating.
So this one, everybody knows about the Manson family.
Yeah.
But do you know, this is so unbelievable, guys. This is so unbelievable. In my research from a book called Chaos, there is, in San Francisco, everybody in hippie music knows Haight Ashbury.
Yeah.
Correct?
Oh, yeah. Sure. Yeah. That's.
Do you know about the Haight Ashbury Clinic?
No.
So because of all of the sexually transmitted diseases that were going on with the hippies back then.
Sure.
They had clinics, free clinics, to try to help like get rid of the spread of disease that was going on, right? Well, the man that ran the clinic, his name was Jolly West.
Uh-huh.
And what most people didn't know until it was recently open to the public was that he was head of a CIA project.
Wow.
That this was the CIA planted in a clinic in Haight Ashbury.
Oh, they were scared to death of hippies
and that
free love movement, but not because it was a free love movement, because it was a...
It was a powerful movement that was getting the masses to do something.
Sort of a fundamentally communist socialist leading movement, and it was huge. They were terrified.
Have you ever heard of the CIA program called MK Ultra?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, that one. Yeah.
He was in MK Ultra.
Oh, really?
He was the psychiatrist behind giving the drugs.
Oh, my gosh. For mind control.
Have you ever seen The Men Who Stare at Goats?
Yeah.
Okay, so this same guy, do you know?
And they just, he was the quote unquote, the head of this health department.
He was the head of the clinic, Haight Ashbury Clinic.
Wow.
And do you know who he gave acid to on a constant basis? Charles Manson.
Manson, yeah.
Because Manson was like a pimp. He ran these girls, and they all had venereal diseases and such that was going on. And so what he was doing, but not only that, they also, you've heard of the Manchurian Candidate, I'm sure, right? Yep. Where you can do, by the power of suggestion and the use of drugs, you could get somebody like Sirhan Sirhan to assassinate Robert F. Kennedy Sr., right? Uh-huh. And today, Sirhan Sirhan still doesn't remember any of it. He just remembers before and after. He doesn't remember any of it. Huh. So there's this whole idea that they were trying to create super soldiers.
Yeah.
Okay. But one of the things that the CIA was trying to do is undermine the Black Panther Party.
Yes. Sure.
During the time in the 60s, during the Civil Rights Movement. So what they're doing, if you can imagine what Manson did later on, he's giving all these drugs like LSD to all these girls. He goes to the Spahn Ranch and then there's some issues with drugs or whatever. So what he does is they go out and they commit these murders and then they try to pin it on whom? The Black Panther Party. They're trying to start a race war.
Ah.
Okay.
Wow.
So the idea now is that this is a cult, but it's possible that this cult was created by accident by the CIA. It was not intended to be this way, but it was. So it's not just as simple as it was. Now, these women that were under the control of Manson, he was obviously very persuasive, but they think that the way that these drugs and the drugs were laced, that they were easily susceptible to the power of persuasion because of those drugs that were given by the CIA.
Wow. Dude. Interesting. So I didn't know that connection.
That's what I'm telling you. Like, most people don't know this. Dude, we're going to get into.
I'm telling you, the 50s and the 60s,
crazy time.
Wild.
Yes.
Yeah. Just like everybody.
Absolutely. Did it blink flash? He just turned left.
Yeah, yeah.
It probably quit recording.
Grab a weapon. Andy looked left.
No, it's just...
That's like a fun drinking game for this episode. every time Andy looks left in a terrified fashion, take a drink.
I need to put the thing somewhere else. I need to put it somewhere where I could like just divert my eyes.
Yes.
So I'm not scaring you guys every time. No, the computer slept, and that doesn't stop the recording, but it does make the remote control
right
go blank.
Yeah.
Although it does continue to record. It's very exciting. Maybe I'll leave all this in.
Yeah. Just leave it in. You guys know what it's like up in here.
Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, there's so many more groups like the Children of God, the Children of the Lamb of God. Like, there's all kinds of groups in America that are strictly just American cults.
There's like an Amish group in Polk County that's really kind of
there's cult-y. A what?
It's not some Amish.
Okay.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. The Word of Life.
Yes!
It's a big deal.
Yeah. They like own the entire town.
Yeah,
you know?
pretty much. Yeah, in Rutherford County.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, we talked about that. We talked about that in here once before. It's
not on tape though, right?
Actually, we did.
Oh, did we?
We did. Yeah, just for a hot minute. Sarita mentioned it a little bit more.
But that is 100% like a cult, and they like own the whole town.
It's pretty cool, man. I think I'm going to join. Like I said, I'm susceptible.
Yeah.
I just like the women's hairdos in that group. It's so 90s tees.
Really?
I miss it. Yeah, I miss it. So anyway, that's
big hair.
So if you guys want to learn more about this, go to Notes from the Other Side, where Tiziana's already, we've already done the first one with Keith Green, and keep following what she's doing. Make sure to click and follow her page and grow her page and share her page. She's doing some really thorny stuff on that, which I enjoy.
Yeah.
And then also go to our Patreon. If you want to hear this, you have to enter in at the $3 level. I've decided because Andy is so expensive and because... No, he's not. No, but the time that it takes to do this research, yeah. the time it takes to record these, the time, the money that gets put into this, I think it has a value of $3 per month. I know we're not Netflix, but hey,
yeah,
$3 is $3. Mm-hmm. Suck on it. If you want to hear it, then you better pay the three or just forget
it. Yeah, I already am going to, I'm signing up because I want to listen to it.
Some people give up to the $20. Everybody,
Patreon subscriber. I'll tell you what, Teasy, I'll give it to you for two.
What a great deal. Well, so this has been
one of my great cons I've always wanted to do. You remember like kind of behind where Lowe's is at the end of Duncan Hill Road, there used to be this place there that they just had empty barrels.
That's right.
And there was a cash box. And if you wanted a barrel, you threw some cash in the box and you took the barrels.
Yes.
I always wanted to. One night, move all of the barrels to the other side of the road and put a cash box up above them that was like 50 cents less. Not to keep the cash or the barrels.
Just for the
absurdity. Just sorry.
There's always a competitor right across the street.
Discount barrels.
Yes.
Right here.
Well, this has been our first hybrid episode of the Burrows of Berea and...
Notes from the Other Side.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Andy, thanks so much for recording it and looking left.
Take another drink.
I just
take another drink, people.
I tried to find the thing I was thinking about with the Jehovah's, and obviously you're right. Maybe it's just some misinformation I got or some things I got mixed up with the, especially with the 144,000 people and stuff. At any rate, that's just wrong. I'm just wrong about that, apparently.
Right.
So I that's one thing I was furiously Googling, so I want to correct myself.
Consider the Jehovah's Witnesses, you would consider, you know, like the Baptists or the Methodists around here would consider them to be a cult. That's why I asked you at the very beginning. I would say, you know, how do you know which one is? Because Jehovah's Witnesses believe in Jesus Christ. They just don't believe that he's God. Mm-hmm. And they are very devout. They're very serious about their faith. I mean, they won't do blood transfusions because they think that you shouldn't. And they don't celebrate birthdays because John the Baptist was killed on his birthday. And they make a lot of decisions. They study the Bible. They go out and they proselytize and they grow their group. But one of the things about them that's so unique is that they're really into like the last days and the end times. Mm-hmm. Like the Jehovah's have always been that. And so are the Adventists.
Tower.
But the Adventists are more mainstream now and you wouldn't consider them a cult anymore, even though they were, you know, started similarly, like the Millerites is where it all began. And then you had, you know, the Jehovah's Witnesses were called Russellites, you know, because they were Charles Taze Russell is the one that started them. And then you have Joseph Smith of the Mormons, and he sees the angel Moroni and believes that he's writing a testament and he has golden plates, you know, and
special glasses that
special spectacles, the golden spectacles, you know. And so all of these groups, like the Mormons, would have been considered, you know, a cult. They believed that this man was a charlatan, but now it's considered an acceptable religion in America. Right. You know, Jehovah's Witnesses are considered an acceptable religious faith in America.
A little fringe, but
Fringe, but they're still considered.
Yeah, but they're still legitimate. You know, they've got 501c status, I'm sure.
They, absolutely they do. And so it's bizarre, but there's
the
mark a fine
of,
line.
The mark of success of a religion.
Yes. Yeah, whether or not you've been able to get 501c status. I mean, frankly.
So what I want to tell the listeners is if you do not become a member of my Patreon at the $3 level.
And you're the worst human being that ever lived.
Then you don't have the Holy Spirit touching you. And you need to follow my group. Did that work?
Well, I guess you're.
I mean, you're in.
Out's gonna I know.
I sucked you straight in.
And I'm Annie also was determined. I'm also susceptible to cult-like behavior, considering I've been involved in two of them.
And if you send your email to Andy, he will get you in for a crisp $2
yeah,
bill.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, you know what?
The discount, the discounted price.
Caveat: literally has to be a $2 bill.
And you have to mail it. Physically
yeah.
mail
oh,
it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
In an envelope.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate you guys being here. And go to our Patreon page. That's www.patreon.com. That's patreon.com/the Burrows of Berea. Or you can go to Notes from the Other Side to hear Tiziana's study. And you can find that anywhere you hear your podcast.
Yeah. I also have a website. It's Notes from the Other Side, NFTOS.net. Notes from the Other Side.net.
Say that again.
I had to think about it. NFTOS.net, Notes from the Other Side. And okay. It's where my blog, all it streams the podcast. And there's also Patreon information over there. NFTOS.net.
Yes. Oh, .net.
Yeah. .com was taken.
Dude.
Yep.
NFTOS.com was taken. So whatever. Thanks.
GiraffeStudio.com. They want like $2,000-$3,000 for that. They can have it.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
What's yours?
Net. It's a net.
It's a net. Yeah. See, yeah. NFTOS.net.
Yeah. No,
there's my pretty face, all my blog.
Do you know what an NFT is?
It's an insufficient funds.
Nope.
Right?
NFT is a non-fungible token. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah. Yeah. Like the Bored Ape or whatever they were.
That's right.
Before all those things, before even the people that thought they were cool realized they were garbage.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, it was also something, it's sort of a thing that came with cryptocurrencies and stuff like that.
Oh. You know,
that
but like little pieces of digital art that were somehow protected so that there could only be one of them.
That's right.
Well, my and website has nothing to do with any of that.
Yeah.
there will be none of that at nftos.net. That's note from the other side.net.
That's awesome.
I actually hope that is my website, so I have to go check.
Yeah, I hope it is too. All right. Well,
thanks,
we'll talk
guys.
To you guys again next time.
Peace
See
out.
Ya.
They called themselves the Class, later Heaven's Gate, a group of ordinary people who walked away from everything and believed they were chosen to leave this world behind, not metaphorically, literally.
If I would title this tape, it would be Last Chance to Evacuate Planet Earth Before It Is Recycled.
Led by a man who claimed to speak for beings beyond the stars, they trained, obeyed, disappeared. And in 1997, they carried out one of the most haunting acts of mass death in American history.
San Diego sheriff's deputies stumble into a house of death, a multi-million dollar mansion filled with dozens of bodies, the site of a grim mass suicide.
But this isn't just a story about a cult. This is a story about the need to belong, about the quiet loneliness that hides in plain sight, and the human desire to believe in something, even if it means leaving Earth behind to find it. I'm Rick Welch. Join me as we uncover the chilling truth behind Heaven's Gate, from hospital beds to the internet, from whispered prophecy to suicide pacts. This is the full story, told in real time from the inside out. This is The Sky Watchers, a 7-part investigative podcast series, available only on Patreon. Subscribe now at www.patreon.com/theburrowsofberea and hear the story that was never meant to be told. The stars are waiting. Are you?
I'm legitimately going to Google and make sure